This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, the debate over GMOs from a scientific perspective. First up, Newport last fall began its quest to become the first smart city in the Midwest. Last month, Cincinnati announced it was looking for partners and providers to begin its smart city plans. The Regional Smart Cities Initiative was created to bring cohesiveness to these and other similar projects. It will officially launch at the Smart Cincy Summit taking place next Tuesday. And joining us to discuss the Regional Smart Cities Initiative and Smart Cincy Summit are Director of the Kentucky Innovation Network, Casey Barrich, Venture Smarter President and Director of the Regional Smart Cities Initiative, Zach Huhn, and Dr. Jonathan Corey, Assistant Professor at the University of Cincinnati Department of Civil and Architectural Engineering and Construction Management. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Casey, Zach, and Jonathan, good to see everybody this afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Zach, start us off. What is a smart city? What do we mean by that?
It's a bit of a loaded question, Mark.
There are a lot of different definitions, though, aren't there?
Yeah, sure. So depending on who you're speaking to, it certainly means something else. And as we've been looking at rolling these initiatives out throughout the region, we're finding that several different municipalities are taking a very different approach in achieving what seems to be very similar goals. So that really is looking at using technology as a tool to improve outcomes for residents and businesses. So, you know, in the region, we have problems facing us that are pretty critical, from infrastructure to the opioid epidemic. And we're looking at using data and smart infrastructures to solve problems that fit into that range. So we're really across the map. So that's why it's so important that we do bring cohesiveness to these conversations, like you mentioned, so that the people that have their core competency and their expertise can get the support they need to focus on doing what they need to do.
Hey, can you give me some examples of things you would find in a smart city? What kind of devices are we talking about?
So before the show, you mentioned a word, a node. And so a node to technology people means a lot of different things. But really, we're talking about something that is a point of connectivity within a city. So it could be within a light pole. It could be within a kiosk. So the city of Newport was the first smart city in the Midwest officially because of a local company there that rolled out their SmartLink kiosks. And I actually believe those are profitable for the city of Newport already. So it's an example of how a smart city solution can act as a profit center and actually alleviate municipal budgets so that you can start scaling them out and testing and iterating solutions throughout the region. And that's one of the hopes that we're hoping to accomplish with RSCI.
So, Jonathan, what are some other things infrastructure-wise that you need to create a smart city?
So the smart city can end up having a whole bunch of different systems. On our end, we're looking at things like, can we improve the traffic signals? So everyone's had the experience of seeing a traffic signal going, why am I sitting here when there's nobody else at this intersection? And the rage that comes from that. So once we start looking at how a traffic signal actually works, a traffic signal is remarkably dumb. It doesn't know who's there, doesn't know that people are waiting, doesn't
know
how many
people are.
It's set to a
timer, isn't it? It's set by a timer, right, basically?
There are different ways to do it, but a lot of areas in downtowns in particular tend to be on fixed time patterns because they're usually timing it for the pedestrians and they don't know how many people are going to be walking any given cycle. So you end up with situations where you sit and wait. And also, as you get into more dense networks, more traffic signals per mile kind of a thing, the alignment of the green light from one signal to the next becomes more important for delay than the time spent at any individual intersection. So by using fixed time, they can make it so that you'll get to the next green light if you're traveling at the right speed.
But a smart light would know when people were standing there and how many cars were. Is that how that
Correct.
Would work?
So as our vehicles get smarter, and there is a technology initiative at the USDOT called Connected Vehicle, the connected vehicle systems will actually talk to the traffic signals, and they'll do a couple things for us. One of them is being able to tell the traffic signal which way you want to go. So you approach the traffic signal and says, I want to go left or I want to go right. So now the traffic signal knows, oh, I need to add a little bit more time to that left turn. Or this person's going to turn right. They can turn right freely. I don't have to allocate time for them. As you get more efficient allocation of time, you spend less time waiting at the light.
And that's just one aspect of a smart
Correct.
City. There could be many other aspects.
Additional aspects. So one of the things we're looking at is environmental sensors. So if you look at how the environmental EPA and the Southwest Ohio Air Quality Agency work around here, there are give or take about 20 or so stations around the southwest corner of Ohio that are measuring different criteria pollutants that are important to the EPA. Now, the challenge is a lot of the equipment used to do those measurements is like $500,000, $200,000 in instruments. So you can't – you literally can't afford to put a lot of them out. What we're looking at is also changing how we're sensing this stuff. So if you have 1,000 low-quality, low-resolution sensors that you can spread all over the place, now you can get a little bit better idea about trends locally, even though those individual sensors aren't that great. They're cheaper, you can put a lot of them out, and then they can tie into the smart city system to give you more localized results.
Casey, let's have you weigh in on smart cities.
I probably come at this from a slightly different angle. So I became involved in this about 2 years ago when I saw the Department of Transportation had an opportunity for cities to present proposals for $40 million. And I believe our region could use $40 million. So I pulled together some folks from NKU, Centrifuge. And the reality was we could not pull it off. There was not enough knowledge, time, energy, and compared to our competitor cities who were all applying for it, St. Louis, Indianapolis, and Columbus, Ohio, who ended up receiving $40 million, which they've turned into $140 million for their smart city initiatives. So my interest is a little more from the business side. I want to make sure that one, Northern Kentucky's involved, but secondly, that we're prepared when that next opportunity comes along. And lo and behold, Zach appeared on my doorstep one day, and I was like, manna from heaven.
So you think a regional approach is a better way to deal with this?
Absolutely.
Pull your resources.
Yes, absolutely. I think we are an overall region. Northern Kentucky might be challenged a bit more in that they don't have a major city such as Cincinnati. They have a number of small cities. So I've taken it on as my role, and Trey Grayson from the Chamber in Northern Kentucky, that we have to educate, which I think that's the whole process, and Zach's shaking his head. The key is to educate people in this first phase so that they know what a smart city is and they don't think it costs money. They can actually make money on smart cities.
Absolutely. It can be an economic driver for, you know, businesses and governments. We're talking about deploying solutions that are alleviating what we're looking at as strained municipal budgets. And we could be talking about creating smart infrastructure that's hard, such as taking a look at how we're looking at our infrastructure, our road systems, and we are also looking at soft infrastructure. But like Casey said, depending on who we're speaking to, the conversation is a little bit different. So it's not only just about educating the key constituents, it's also about aligning them around what our available resources are and also about what our available addressable opportunity areas are. When we take a regional approach, we're able to do exactly what you mentioned, Mark, and that's pulling our resources together so that we can be better together. You know, collaboration more so than competition, I think, is the approach that's driving our mission.
I think I should point out here really quick that especially on the hard infrastructure side, the roads, the traffic signal equipment, all that kind of thing, one of the big challenges that we face is if we're going to change over 175,000 traffic signals in the country to do new things with the new equipment, where is that money coming from? And so one of the critical challenges that we face in transportation is we just don't have the money with the current funding streams, the current economic alignments, because you look at the gas tax. Vehicle fuel efficiency has been going up. Vehicle miles traveled has been going up. The gas tax hasn't. So people are paying proportionally lower taxes per mile traveled than they did 20 years ago. And then you compound that with prices going up for the construction and maintenance side of things. So as you look at how these smart cities function, how we're going to keep our infrastructure up to date with modern technology, there's a real question in the current model about how you do that. So the smart city systems, particularly, you start talking about, you know, advertising built into this, fees being paid through the system.
I think it comes – I mentioned a word or a phrase earlier, and that's value exchange. Mm-hmm. When I mentioned value exchange, we're really talking about – and municipalities need to be doing this whether we're looking through the lens of smart cities or not. Every time we deploy a solution, it needs to do at least one of three things, and hopefully it does more than one of these three things. And those are creating value, cutting costs, or generating revenue. And oftentimes, because a lot of these new technologies have the capability to do things that to them seem basic, I'm personifying technology now, such as collecting data, we can get creative with our public-private partnerships to figure out how to create value exchanges with that data so that we can make better planning decisions on the institutional and governmental side as well as in the private sector. And then once we start creating a foundational layer of connectivity that really starts with smart infrastructure, the government's not the only body that benefits from that connected capability. I'm a fan of alliteration, if you might tell. But private sector also benefits. So if you have these mesh networks set up that advanced manufacturing or advanced agriculture can tap into, or that transportation companies can utilize so that they can test their next generation solutions, we're really talking about creating an ecosystem that's going to be attractive to talent. So you know, outside of just the simple dollars and cents of it, we're also going to be attracting and retaining top talent to this region because we're going to be working on innovative and creative projects.
Is it realistic to think you can take a regional approach as opposed to having one city who, my definition of a smart city is this, so I'm going to go in this direction, and another city that says my definition of a smart city is this, so I'm going to go in this direction? Is it possible to get everybody to on the same page?
I think it's possible from a regional perspective, absolutely. But I think at a hyper-localized perspective, it's really important to be respectful of the culture of where you are. Different residents are going to want different things. Different businesses are going to want different things. And that's why it's important that we have an agile approach to building and deploying smart cities within smart regions. And when I say agile, to those who aren't involved in technology, we mean quick iterations of deployments. So we're constantly improving on what we're putting out there, and we're making sure that all of the solutions work together and are interoperable. Excuse me.
I agree. Any efforts that we pour forth in Northern Kentucky, we must be able to share that data throughout the country, but especially across the river to our friends in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm.
Jonathan, what do you think are some of the hurdles to taking this approach?
Oh, those questions. So one of the biggest ones is what we see as infrastructure versus what we see as technology. So one of the biggest one of the challenges with particularly like traffic signals is that because they are seen as infrastructure rather than technology, you put out a traffic signal controller and you expect it to work for 30 years. How many of us have computers that are older than 5 or 10? So you start talking about a lot of, say, Cincinnati controllers are 170 controllers that were designed in 1974. They literally are – the design is older than I am. You know, we're still working with them, and for a lot of things, they are still perfectly serviceable pieces of equipment. But when we start talking about how is a controller that is based on a chip that runs 8 bits at like 16 megahertz, I mean, your cell phone has something like 10,000 times the
processing power.
It'll
be obsolete in a couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you start talking about trying to do the calculations necessary to deal with, you know, 50 arriving cars, you're not doing it on something with 4K of RAM and 4K of hard memory. So now when you update that, are you going to put in a system that is going to be out there for 30 years again so that you then have the same problem the next generation? Or are you going to change your update cycles and change your technology, change how you view this so that you're talking about updating 5 or 10 years? You're talking about something that is off-the-shelf hardware, not a piece of specialized equipment. For example, you know, you can go get a rack mount, a server-style computer for extended temperatures and everything else that you need for a traffic signal controller for a couple grand. A controller is like 4,000. So you start talking about how long your update cycles are, how often you're spending that money.
So it sounds like you better have a pretty good plan and better know your goals before you jump into this.
Absolutely. And a lot of times, you know, if you're looking at it through the municipal lens, the agencies that are required for collaboration already have very specific goals. So it's about reverse engineering and finding applications for off-the-shelf or emerging technologies to address what those goals are. And you asked a question that I wanted to address, and what are the roadblocks? Well, I think there are several, but the four that just pop out to me is public policy. Inclusive of special interests, general understanding and knowledge about the technologies and the opportunity areas, And then compatibilities amongst the solutions. And so in the private sector, I think you need vendors to be held to a certain standard when they want to deploy within municipal boundaries. And I think that the municipalities need to be understanding of what those standards need to be. And then there needs to be something that ties them all together from the policy framework standpoint, whether it's an official policy or if it's an NGO that's saying, hey, this is something that you need to do. I think that it requires collaboration, and it's one of the things that we mentioned earlier. But those are the four things that seem to me to be getting in the way. But also, as data is collected and our leaders become more open to using technology, I mean, the leaders throughout the region in the city of Cincinnati, the city of Newport are very good examples of people that are doing just that. We're going to start solving these problems, and we're going to. In our region, we're going to create a model for what will be recognized as sustainable and smart regional growth.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us to talk about the Regional Smart Cities Initiative and Smart Cincy Summit, our director of the Kentucky Innovation Network, Casey Barrich, Venture Smarter President and director of the Regional Smart Cities Initiative, Zach Hune, and Dr. Jonathan Corey, Assistant Professor at the University of Cincinnati Department of Civil and Architectural Engineering and Construction Management. And you can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Casey, before we took the break, you were ready to weigh on what they were talking about, so go right ahead.
I think sometimes people think smart cities and they're thinking technology and bytes and bits. It has practical applications. Our region has a looming workforce issue. We're not going to have enough people ready for the jobs that are coming. Amazon's coming to CVG, 2,800 jobs. DHL just hired 900 people. Well, somehow we have to move those people to those jobs. That might be across the river. That might be north of Cincinnati. But I think you'd be amazed at some of the transportation applications a smart city has. Maybe Zach can...
Absolutely. So I always like to use this in my conversations when we talk about smart city applications. When I look at recent history, last century, we automated communication. I think that this century, possibly even this decade, we have the opportunity to automate transportation. And so we're talking about smart mobility. What is smart mobility? Well, we're moving people, goods, and utilities. I'm considering internet and basic connectivity as a utility, really. And so that's kind of required. And we're getting smart about how we're doing it. So we're taking a hard look at deploying a smart layer of infrastructure, both hard and soft, as we noted earlier, so that we can do exactly what Casey is talking about, connect people to jobs, connect people to opportunities, and create a more interconnected region. So, DHL and Amazon being here is a very big deal. So I'm sure they'd be very interested in piloting transportation programs to move their products from their warehouses to their consumers. And I would love to see, Ohio Department of Transportation and United States Department of Transportation start looking at the Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana region as a leader in this space, as well as an opportunity where they can come in and be a critical component of deploying what would be the first smart region in a tri-state capacity, looking at not just mobility, but really the four pillars of smart cities that we've kind of identified. And that's connectivity is the first, connecting people, places, things, and information or data. Mobility, moving people, goods, and utilities. Security, so public safety and cybersecurity. I think this is a natural outcome of a smart city. And then finally, sustainability. How are we going to scale these things? And what is sustainability? So it's not just sustainability in key sectors. Talk about making a green region. It's also about fiscal sustainability. So the question that it always comes back to is, well, these technologies sound great. These visions sound great. But how in the heck are you going to pay for it? Well, with fiscal and sustainability in mind, it comes back to the idea of value exchanges. And in some cases, it might even require private sector investment. And in many cases, I think we're seeing that here in the region. So we're seeing a path being laid down for a smart region success story as we speak. And, the people in this room are certainly a critical part of making that happen.
But it's going to take both government and private sector.
Oh, absolutely. A little bit of something else, magic fairy dust or something.
Luck.
But yeah, luck.
It's also going to take some personalities to drive it and some understanding at the public, private, and just general citizen levels of what's going on. So one of the things that we're looking at on the education side at the university is the smart city systems are going to completely change how we interact with the built environment. So by built environment, I mean the totality of buildings, streets, signals, Wi-Fi nodes, all that infrastructure. And when we start looking at that, we're seeing things like now our civil engineers also have to know how to run databases. Because if you're going to do transportation stuff, now you're going to have to know how to query this data and find the information you need. One of the things that we're looking at is data is really easy to get in a lot of ways. It's fairly straightforward.
How do you use it?
Getting information out of that data, that's the challenge. That's where the insight has to be and where the first person who's looking at this data and saying, I can see this in it, is really critical.
Cincy Insights is a perfect example of that. And I think this is an example of Cincinnati has taken a very digital approach to building a smart city, which naturally makes sense. And they built a data visualization platform after they built a platform to start collecting their data. So, you know, step one, they collected data. They got it all into, you know, one place, or they're trying to get it all into one place. Step two, they created visualization platform, which is their Cincy Insights, which Lee Tammy and her team have won awards for. And people are starting to be able to see what's going on. And then as we deploy quote-unquote smart city solutions, they could be smart traffic lights or smart trash cans that ping when they need to be picked up, the voters and residents and constituents will be able to see what's happening. And then I think they'll be able to engage with it. You know, I spoke to Lyden Faust, who's the founder of Spatial, yesterday, and he and I have a very similar origin story to our smart city engagement, and that is in the fact that he started building cities using Sims 2000 on his computer as a video game. And you know what? That is absolutely my origin story as well, because we were able to see what we were doing and visualizing it. And to some extent, you know, you need that level of engagement in a society where 97% of our population play video games and kind of expect that type of the ability to see, not hear, or do both. But anyway, so you're exactly right, Dr. Corey. The ability to not only use the information but to also relay it in a way that's communicatable to the key constituents is important, because it all comes down to the taxpayers being happy so that the policymakers can continue making these decisions to move these ideas forward.
And yeah. Speaking of taxpayers, I think we're lucky as a region, and particularly in Cincinnati, the political leadership is very involved in this. Zach and I have spent time with Mayor Cranley, and we were very surprised at how much he knew and inquisitive his questions were. He stumped the band a couple times on us with his questions. So I think political leadership needs to be a big part of this.
Yeah, we're excited to welcome several elected officials from the city next week at the summit. And I think that's a good show of support from the elected officials and also the employees that work beneath them. Because it does, you know, the word collaboration is what I always come back to. And when you have public sector and private sector working together, again, those are some of the bricks that are being laid in the foundation of what will be a successful building.
You mentioned security, Zach, as being one of the four pillars.
Also a big concern for many people.
Yeah, a lot of concern for a lot of people with all this connectivity. Do smart cities lead to more security?
They lead to more secured cities. They lead to safer cities. Now, this might rub some people the wrong way on the other side of the pond. A city that I think is taking advantage of these solutions to create a more secured city, but they're also violating the rights of the citizens to some extent, is London. They're collecting a lot of information and they're storing all that information. And if you walk by, you know, something, they know you're there, and private sector has access to that. Public sector has access. It's kind of a weird situation. Newport, a very different story. The company that rolled out those kiosks took a security first approach. And the gentlemen that built it, I just happen to know this, are certified ethical hackers. And so they collect all that data to use predictive analytics, but they don't actually store it in a way that is tracking individuals. And so it could be a privacy concern for individuals, but it doesn't have to be if there's proper collaboration. And then kind of on the reverse side, we're creating a lot of vulnerabilities from the cybersecurity perspective. So in 2016, there were 1.6 billion connected devices keeping a few dozen cities smart. By 2025, the number of devices keeping municipalities smart will easily surpass 50 billion. And we're creating individual points of vulnerability. So this is obviously a conversation that from the standards and protocols perspective at the federal government, state government, local government, this is obviously a concern and something that is absolutely being addressed. So, you know, similar to how you saw NIST protocols when it came to government cybersecurity, I think those are something similar to that, if not that in itself, will be what is applied to many smart city style solutions.
So where do we stand in this area? Newport's on the way, if not already there.
Newport's on
Cincinnati
the way.
Is making moves in that direction.
Yeah, so I would hope that the city of Newport and the city of Cincinnati build solutions that are able to connect together, and it seems to me that we're heading in that direction. I think that
I have to throw a shout out for the city of Covington, who's looking at initiatives including complete broadband coverage in their innovation
and Lawrenceburg.
District. Yeah,
the city of Lawrenceburg too. I mean, we see the foundation of a smart region. I'm sorry to cut you off, Casey. You're absolutely right.
No problem. We have an area called the Innovation District in Covington. And Innovation Alley is in that, and we hold events there. And we, you know, my analogy was Innovation Alley without Wi-Fi is a little like ice cream without a spoon. You know, you have to have it.
We're actually hosting the Community Day. I'm going to plug an event for us at Innovation Alley next week. So we're having the Smart Cincy Summit next Tuesday. Next Wednesday, we're having a very connected Wi-Fi friendly event at Innovation Alley with Northern Kentucky Innovation Network, and it will be free. And I think it'll be a way for public and private sector officials from either side of the river. Sometimes that acts as a roadblock to come and see what's going on with these conversations and engage with the leaders in Newport and Covington and Cincinnati that are trying to make these things happen. And you're saying it absolutely correctly, Casey, that you know, without the spoon is kind of a funny reference, but we can't build a smart city unless we have a foundational layer of connectivity. And I think that is why the city of Cincinnati chose to start with Wi-Fi. They could have started with creating a mesh network, which some technology people may have pointed them in that direction, but that would be connecting devices. What we need to do is connect people first, because that's really what a smart city is doing. It's considering the outcomes of people first. And so to that extent, I think that the city was heading in the right direction by starting with Wi-Fi connectivity so we can connect people to the opportunities around them. And then from there, we can create these mesh networks so they'll all connect together. And I would like to see Covington, Newport, Cincinnati, all of the surrounding districts—
Absolutely.
To create solutions that are, in fact, interoperable so that as a resident goes from one place to the next, he or she doesn't have to download 19 different apps so that they can, you know, see what's going on in that neighborhood. But instead, we have one cohesive solution for the people. And, you know, vendors and several of my customers, in fact, might not be happy about the idea of, well, everyone needs to have my app. But again, it just comes down to the individuals that are going to be using them. So interoperable solutions are required. Casey's absolutely right. It's good to see Covington hopping in, and I should have mentioned them because we have been in touch with them as well, and that was a bad oversight.
Oh, no, I'll forgive you, Zach. I think Zach makes the point. We can have lots of fancy technology. Sorry, Jonathan. But the reality is it's the person at the bottom. If they're using it and making their life better, more efficient, then you'll see adoption all the way up through the technology.
And this is one of the reasons why we really do need the standards first. Because one of the things that's going to happen is you think about your average commute. You start, say, out in Milford. Then you travel on the freeway. Then you go on a state highway. Then you go to, you know, through two or three more cities on the way in. And then you stop in Cincinnati. How many legal jurisdictions did you just go through? You might have gone through 7 or 8. Do you want a separate app for each one?
I think you're making his argument for a regional approach too.
Sure.
With this. So.
Well, and you know, back to your point about standards, there's an international organization, IEEE, and they, you know, I believe will be the body that releases the standards that will be recognized for municipal approaches. And I'm excited to say that they have their eyes on Cincinnati, and we have an open dialogue with them, and we're working with them to create, develop, and deploy these standards. Go ahead. It looks like you're.
No, we need to. I just was going to tell you we need to wrap this up. So I wanted to ask you one more thing.
Yep.
Finish your thought, though. I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
Well, I'm just reiterating the idea that standards are they're important, they're necessary, and they're in process.
How long before smart cities become a complete reality? For lack of a better word, or are these always going to be something that are evolving?
I think the idea of a smart city is living and breathing. We have the opportunity to do some really cool things within this decade if we all collaborate. And so I think we can start realizing the outcomes of smart cities within the next calendar year, to be completely frank. But as we scale that out, it will take time. But I'll give the last word to you, gentlemen.
Yeah. So the technology side, we could do it today with our technology. It's much more the policy, the implementation,
the standards
side
and the policies, exactly.
As far as whether we'll ever hit a ultimate smart city level, I don't think we will, because what's going to happen is technologies are going to change. If you think about self-driving vehicles, okay, so now you have self-driving vehicles. Now you have to have traffic signal systems to interact with them. Now you can start changing your transit over to self-driving vehicles and you're dispatching self-driving vehicles. But now do individuals own the self-driving vehicles anymore, or are they –
will cars still look like cars?
So, Jonathan, you're on the ever-evolving side.
Yeah. If it ever goes static, it's because the country collapsed and we had nuclear fire and it was all bad.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
The pleasure was all mine, all ours.
Ditto.
Director of the Kentucky Innovation Network, Casey Barrich, Venture Smarter President and Director of the Regional Smart Cities Initiative, Zach Kuhn, and Dr. Jonathan Corey, Assistant Professor at the University of Cincinnati, Department of Civil and Architectural Engineering and Construction Management. The Smart Cincy Summit is going to be held next Tuesday, April the 25th at Union Hall, and you can find a link to more information about it at wvxu.org.